This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. In the world of hip-hop, where most music is sampled, the Roots are exceptional. They play instruments. The Roots begins a national tour today. Our guest, Questlove, is the band's co-founder and drummer. Spin magazine included their latest CD, Phrenology, on its list of the best albums of 2002. In GQ, rock critic Tom Moon wrote, "The Roots have never been hitmakers. Their vision for black music tears out in radical directions, encompassing jazz, trance, rock, and Brazilian pop. From the beginning, this group of jazz heads and rhyme warriors have done things differently. They're a band, for starters, working in a genre in which musicians were once thought irrelevant. Their orbit has included activist rappers and rock stars, anyone grappling with what it means to be black and alternative." Questlove, who is also known as Amir Thompson, grew up around music. His father, Lee Andrews, led the doo-wop group Lee Andrews and the Hearts, which had the hit Teardrops. Questlove co-founded The Roots in 1987 when he was a student at the Philadelphia High School for Creative and Performing Arts. Terry spoke with him this winter. Let's start with a track from Phrenology. This is Break You Off. Bad Mrs. Throwing raspberry kisses on me. You looking for direction, girl, I feel your vision on me. Just don't let them see you sweating. We ain't supposed to be involved. Knowing when we get it off, girl, I mean it all. Keeping you feeling till you're taking it tossed. And when I'm breaking it off, there's no denying the fact it's wrong. Cause you got a man. You probably breaking his heart. He trying to figure the reason you're gone. Is it cause he's superficial? Or is it too submissive? Or did I come along and hit you with the futuristic? Or is it cause you really couldn't see your future with him? All he bought is paper, never took the time to truly listen. You want it gripped up, flipped and thrown to get stripped and shown the way to get in the zone. Of course, dealing with this, you won't be taking the loss. You need to leave him alone and roll with the one who breaking him off. We getting started.
When you started playing drums, as somebody who already loved rap, and this was like in the 80s, did you think there'd be a place for you in rap or hip-hop?
See, yeah, I kind of thought it was natural. You have to understand that when I was coming up, the first records that were out were records that were played by musicians. So you had Doug Wimbush, bassist Doug Wimbush, who plays for Living Color right now, and Keith LeBlanc, who's a popular drummer in his own right. They were the, I guess, the Sly and Robbie of Sugar Hill Records. And then Sugar Hill's the rival, Enjoy Records, the label that had the Treacherous Three and Spoonie G, they were backed up by a percussionist named Pumpkin. So I just thought it was a natural thing. And coming up in high school, when the Roots first started, you know, hip-hop really wasn't that elaborate an arrangement. I'm talking about hip-hop circa 1984, 85, 86. I mean, it's pretty much just a drum beat, a simple drum beat, and a stab. A stab would be sort of like the exclamation point at the end of a sentence. Bam! You know, it could be scratched in or just like some sort of noise, mm-hmm. an enforcement noise. And, you know, so in high school, pretty much Black Thought, Tariq Trotter, would, you know, come up to me and just name any popular song at that time and point and just say, yo, play Top Billing. And, you know, because it was a drum arrangement, I knew how to play it. And that was like the most amazing thing to him. That, oh, he could play Top Billing. He could play, you know, The Bridge Is Over. He could play, you know, just naming all these songs and I could play them. I kind of thought it was natural.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop you right there because that's kind of interesting. Since you came up in the era of sampling, as an actual musician, your friends expected you to basically play the samples. You're still expected
to
play, but you're still expected to play like other people's music.
Right. Well, I mean, that's hip hop is audio pop art. Really, it's just a collage of other ideas, and even at the time, I didn't know that, okay, sampling is the proper term for it. For the hip-hop nation, pretty much the first introduction to real sampling that we've ever seen was this episode of The Cosby Show when Stevie Wonder runs over the Huxtables' car with his limousine. Well, not that violent, but, you know, he invites them to a studio session, and for the first time, America got to see the process of sampling, in which you say something and it's repeated back to you. And after me and my friend saw that episode, we were begging for whatever that machine was called. We didn't know what it was called. You know, like in our heads, it was sort of like the Flintstone episode where, you know, like the little bird is inside of the machine and recreating the noise. And we didn't know how in the world that happened. So just during Christmas, Casio happened to make a product called an SK1 machine, which allowed you about maybe 3 or 4 seconds worth of sampling time. And, you know, me and all my friends got this little toy keyboard for Christmas. And, you know, you mess around with it a little while. You do all, like all the curse words, you know, and all that stuff. And then you start getting serious about it. And that's when I would like run to the basement where my drum set was and try and cram in 8 bars worth of drum breaks within 3 seconds, which, you know, you have to be pretty fast to do it.
Right.
And then I just, you know, realized the endless possibilities of a sampler.
Well, while we're talking about musicianship and sampling, I thought this would be a good time to play Rock You from your new CD, Phrenology, because you're actually playing on this, but you're playing more or less a rhythm line from Queen's We Will Rock You. But again, you're not sampling
well,
it.
Inspired,
you're playing
but,
it,
yeah,
and you're reinterpreting it, too.
It's inspired by it, but some artists are a little iffy about sample clearances, so.
Got it. Anything else you want to say about Rock You?
In case
you
the lawyers are listening.
Right. Anything else you want to say about Rock You?
Rock You is just our mission statement. You know, the roots are so associated with just a mellow atmosphere. I thought it was real important to start off the album with an exclamation point, you know. So Rock You is our mission statement for the album.
Okay. That's right.
Okay.
What I'm about to say, I'll probably hit y'all niggas in a real strange way. Schmucks, ducks, and half-hearted pranks, the clues. Willie Dag, Langston, Hughes, Pushanks, and Cruz. I debut to made the news, and I've been killing it since. Still in the trench, buzzing off the chilling suspense. I want my niggas out that barbed wire, still in the fence. Verbal assassin, I'm a killer, still in the sense. Rhymes is graphic, aiming straight at your mind, then blast that weak. The pieces and particles and fragments, mad vocalists. Yes, I must confess, I'm like Nitty trying to sing a slug of Elliot chest. Just taste on that.
That's The Roots from their new CD, Phrenology. My guest is Questlove, the drummer of the group, and one of the founders. The word niggas is used on the track that we just heard.
Right.
When is it okay with you, and when is it not okay with you to use the word?
You know, for I could play the politically correct term and say, you know, well, okay, we know it's wrong, but I mean, but basically, I think with black people, we pretty much will turn any tragedy into a term of endearment. So, you know, is it right? You know, I don't know if it's right or if it's wrong. You know, personally, I don't think that black people haven't made up that term, but I think that we've turned it around and just it's just another, I guess, like colloquialism for brother. To us, you know, something. Mm-hmm. How you doing? You know.
Did you grow up with it that way?
Pretty much. I mean, it was natural. I mean, there, you know, the difference between if you're being referred to as, you know, my brother, or if it's using a condescending term. Mm-hmm. You know.
You started playing drums when you were in high school. Yes.
No, actually,
earlier
I started
than that?
When I was 2.
Oh, okay.
I was 2 years old. I started The Roots when I was in high school. My father is an oldies doo-wop singer from the Philadelphia area.
Lee Andrews of Lee Andrews and the Hearts.
Yeah, Lee Andrews and the Hearts. So I pretty much, my childhood is pretty much based just backstage at doo-wop extravaganza shows, you know, like Dick Clark Presents, you know, and there would be like 10 groups, Don and Wine, Harvey and the Moonglows, The Tokens, you name it. If they were from the 50s or the 60s, it would just be a big show at either like Madison Square Garden or the Spectrum or out in the Forum in LA. So pretty much that's, I grew up backstage. Watching all these groups.
Leandro's biggest hit, I think, was Teardrops in 1957.
Teardrops. Yeah. 57. Yeah, 57.
Would you be willing to sing a few lines from it just to refresh listeners' memories?
I wouldn't want to scare your listeners, so.
Okay, well, how about this? How about we play a little bit of it?
We can do that, yeah.
I sit in my room looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals. They cover my window pane. I'm thinking of our lost romance and how it should have been. Oh, if we only could start over again. I know you never forgive me, dear, for running out on you. I was wrong to take a chance with somebody new. I sit in my room looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals. They cover my window pane. I know you never.
Okay, so that's Leandro's and the Hearts. So you grew up, you know, backstage and watching your father perform. What sense did it give you of what the music life was like? And then you probably watched your father kind of drop out of sight after the doo-wop era was over. So you also knew what it was like to no longer be in the limelight after having been in it as a young man.
I mean, I was born in the 70s, so pretty much I came along.
Oh, you came along in right in the
It really wasn't about
era.
It.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really wasn't about it. I mean, even though he made it a career, if anything, he taught me that there is a plan B, you know, and that not everyone gets the plan A limelight.
Right. What was his
by the
plan
time
B?
By the time I was born, you know, he had met and married my mother. I have a sister as well, and they had opened up a boutique store, and they were quite content. And you know, as with any music phenomenon that occurs 20 years before, there's an upsurgence of it 20 years later. And I guess most of that started when Sha-na-na appearing at Woodstock, and then pretty much after that, just Dick Clark would throw a slew of shows just in the tri-state area, in the New York area, any place that loved doo-wop. Mm-hmm. And my father just made a great living out of it.
Don't you often wonder if there's going to be like old school rap shows? Like,
oh, there is right now.
Is there already?
Totally. And the thing with hip hop is the motto for hip hop is definitely here today and gone today. So
yeah, I know what you mean.
Anything, mm-hmm. anything, mm-hmm. Anything under 5 years is pretty much considered old school. This weekend, I was listening to a popular New York radio station, and they were like, "Now, back in the day, Wu-Tang Clan, da-da-da-da, old school." I was like, "Wait a minute, Wu-Tang? That's 6 years ago."
Right.
It's like 6-7 years ago. You know, old school to me is, okay, maybe we can say like Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On, like a song that's definitely over 20 years old or something, you know, near 30 years old. But yeah, pretty much in the hip-hop, it's here today and it's gone today.
Let's get back to your high school years. Uh-huh. And you went to the High School of Creative and Performing Arts.
Performing Arts, right.
In Philadelphia.
Yes.
And so that means that you were exposed at a young age to artists of your age, of every sort.
Exactly.
You know painters and dancers and people in theater.
Everything.
And music of
Boys
every
to
sort.
Men, Boys to Men rehearsing in the...
Boys to Men was in your school?
In the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Always rehearsing.
Was it good to be exposed to so much?
It was perfect. You know, like, my first... I actually, unfortunately, I came to Performing Arts High School in the 11th grade. I started, Performing Arts had a private school sector that I went to from first to eighth grade. Then my parents took me out of that school and tried to send me to a college prep school, which was good academic. You know, I could wind up on Jeopardy. you know, you know, talk about the Iliad or something. But, you know, my heart was with music development. And so I begged them to send me to the public school for performing arts. And finally got my wish for the 11th and 12th grade. And walking there, like, I'd never been to public school, and pretty much my only exposure to that type of school was watching the television show Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're kind of wondering, like, okay, is this the type of school that's going to be, like, a cliche? Like, are they going to break out and dance numbers in the hallway and you know, do all the things that you see on television? And, you know, I was, like, real skeptical of it. Like, it's not going to be, like, Fame or whatever. And sure enough, like, you walk into class and, you know, they're singing, you know, Boyz II Men's practicing in the corner. And you have, like, Krista McBride and Joey DeFrancesco trading fours down the hallway.
Right, these are now well-known jazz musicians.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, like, the who's who of, like, the thespian world rehearsing, you know, their sonnets over there, and it's crazy. It was really a weird experience for me.
Now, like street credibility and authenticity is so important in rap, and you know, a lot of people believe that to be a good rap group or hip hop group, you have to like be from the ghetto. You have to be gangsters, the streets.
Right.
Yeah, and so here you are. You know, you didn't go to the prep school. You went to the High School of Creative and Performing Arts. So it was this. Was this? Did you ever see this as like an obstacle to doing what you wanted to do? Because you might not be perceived to have the street cred.
Well, the Roots are also made up of six other people. I just happen to be the mouthpiece of the Roots.
So it's okay that you don't have street.
But my credibility comes in the fact that when it comes to music. You have to have a vast vocabulary of musical knowledge, at least for me. I mean, now pretty much hip hop is and it's just at water stage, which is you know, just turn on a beat machine. You know, you have a lot of producers saying with great pride and alacrity, like, oh, you know, I made this beat in 3 minutes, you know, which I'm like, wow, okay. Whereas I think that for me, a requirement for a good producer in hip-hop is one that has to have a vast knowledge of musical substance. You know, I don't know, just the cats that I look up to, they collect records, they know certain musicians, you know that there's a vast vocabulary that you have to know.
Mm-hmm. One last thing. I'm interested in your record collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I understand you have a really big one. What's the range of things that you listen to?
Anything. I'm just into anything musical. You know, I like the incredible Bongo Rock group. I like David Bowie. I like, you know, I collect a lot of rare hip-hop records. And I collect... just a lot of obscure records that have been used in samples. I'm very curious in the ingredients that other producers have used to make their records. You know, it's sort of like someone going out and buying a cookbook to see the ingredients that went inside of a particular stew. So I collect those type of things.
Do you collect a lot of vinyl?
Yeah, I'm about 27,000 strong right now.
Of vinyl?
I know that's not messing with DJ Shadow's collection. I heard he's up to 60,000.
Wow. It's mighty impressive, though.
I got some ways to go, but yeah, I'll get there.
Okay, and one final question.
Yes.
How come you wear an afro?
Because I'm secretly a Chia Pet.
I won't sing the theme.
Right.
Yeah.
My hair just grows. I come from a family that, you know, I don't have the patience nor the time to go to a barbershop and get it cut every 3 seconds. So my hair just grows. It's always been problematic for me. Just thank God it's in style now. Imagine me trying to get through this hairstyle in the late 80s and the early 90s, you know. Back then I could do a flat top thing, but no, I keep it. It's my crown, you know. It's sort of symbolic now, but yeah, it was a problem back in the day. You know, people staring at me like, oh my God. You know, now it's no thing because everyone has it.
Besides, you're you, so
yeah, exactly.
You can do it now.
I'm an individual.
That's right. Well, thank
or
you so
one
much.
Of the Missing Jacksons. All right, thank you.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Tara.
Questlove of the Roots. The band starts a national tour today. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.
Celebrity, I deal with the real. So if it's artificial, let it.